Hey guys, I absolutely love that you're checking out and listening to the podcast. And I only have one ask quickly, and that would be if you could please share this podcast with somebody else that you maybe know that is going through the system or struggling to navigate it from the youth soccer perspective. And that would mean the absolute world to me because, as you know, I don't sell anything through the podcast and I don't have any sponsorships. And the more people that I can help, that is my overall objective. So I would absolutely love if you could share this with somebody. Take the 5 seconds to do so by sending it through social media or WhatsApp or whatever way that you like to share content, and I will make sure that I continue to deliver valuable and insightful content for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to class number one of the Obsession Beast Parent Education Level 1 course. With this class, we're going to be discussing the competitive levels of U.S. youth soccer. However, though, I need to tell you a little bit about myself first because that's what's on screen. Who am I? You may know me as Kyle C. Wilson. You might know me as Coach Kyle. You might know me as the Angry Soccer Guy, or even by Instagram, Kyle C. Wilson Official. And the question is, am I really the Angry Soccer Guy? And I think after, once you get to know me, I think you'll realize that I'm actually not the Angry Soccer Guy, but what I am is the guy that's trying to help you parents make better decisions and be more informed. And that's what this entire class is about. So you can level up from being a 97% parent, which is basically what everybody else is, to becoming a 3% parent, which is what this course, starting with class number one, is going to teach you. Now, some quick history about myself. I am a former NCAA Division II college soccer player. I have represented the United States at the Futsal World Cup qualifiers and the Futsal World Cup in 2019. And I even have semi-professional playing experience in France prior to finishing my career. So that's some quick information. I also have a list of players that are pros that I have trained. So there's multiple of them. One of them, which you may or may not have heard of before, played for Manchester United. He has won the Premier League, he's won the Champions League, and he's won the European Championship with Portugal with Cristiano Ronaldo. And that is Luis Nani. So if you want to see that video of me training him, you can go to my Instagram or YouTube channel. So if you go to my Instagram, it'll be the top video, one of the pinned ones there that you can watch right away. You can see the training session that I ran with him from July 2023. So I've been very fortunate enough to have that kind of background, and it just helps me put in place these details because you have to get to a certain level to train players like that, okay? Now, here's a question that you need to answer or at least think about. Can we be serious about the U.S. men's and U.S. women's national team moving forward? And from my research, all the countries in the world that have won a men's World Cup in the last 50 years have these four things in common. One, they have a unified system. Two, they have promotion and relegation. Three, they're an exporter of talent. And four, they have a one-player registration system. So I'm going to try and explain a little bit more what this means. But basically, if we look at the best countries in the world that have won World Cups, Spain, Brazil, France, England, Germany, you pick a country, okay? Argentina. They have a system that is designed to work together. That's why it's unified. They have promotion and relegation within their professional ranks, which means you can, the only way to stay in the top division is by earning it. If you don't perform well enough, you will be relegated. That also means smaller clubs can work. It's very, very hard, but they can work themselves up from basically non-league level play, which means non-professional, from the bottom all the way to the top. And it has happened a couple of times that clubs have gone from the very bottom or close to the bottom to the top, which would be like to the Premier League, for example. That is what promotion and relegation creates, and it makes the barrier of entry smaller or easier to get into. And then exporter of talent means that there are players leaving that country to go, or even if it's in that country, to go to the biggest clubs. So that would mean, like, you look at example, Endrick from Brazil is going to Real Madrid when he turns 18 years old. So in like 9 months, this kid signed a pro contract at 16 with Palmeiras. And now he's going to Real Madrid at 18 because they bought him for 20 million. That's crazy. That's an exporter of talent. And then they have a one-player registration system, which I will touch on here shortly. Now, continuing the same question, can we be serious about the U.S. men's and U.S. women's national team? Considering these things that are going to be presented to you momentarily. In the United States, we have 8 governing bodies that can issue a player card. Yet I just told you a minute ago that all the big time countries have one unified system that has one player carding process. Promotion and relegation doesn't exist in our country. Even at youth level, there's barely any promotion and relegation. And at the top level, like MLS, there is absolutely zero promotion and relegation. And we are not producing top talent. Have we produced some good players? Sure. But we have not produced world-class players, and I'll tell you why, just from this quick example. You can read a book that is called Leading by Sir Alex Ferguson. And in that book, there's a certain section where he talks about four world-class players that he's had in his time at managing Manchester United, which was 26 years. And he had some ridiculously good players. But he said he only had four players that were actually world-class. Cristiano Ronaldo, Eric Cantona, Paul Scholes, and Ryan Giggs. Everybody else was not world-class. And he is one of, if not the best managers in history or coaches in history. And he said he's only ever had four world-class players. So that means none of our players have ever been close to world-class. And then we finish up with, we do not have a one registration system, hence the reason why there are eight governing bodies able to issue player cards. Now continuing, same question. Can we be serious about the U.S. men's and U.S. women's national team? So continuing from my research, these are continuous things that countries have when we talk about being successful at the highest level, like winning a World Cup. They have players consistently playing up at the youth level. They have compensation for formation. They have a pro pathway, which means there's more access to go from amateur to pro and to the first teams. There's a cultural buy-in of football. That means the country lives, eats, and breathes football. And then they have environments for formation, which means they have clubs that are trying to develop players. On the flip side, they do not have any of the following. Monopolies on league format, which means, for example, MLS controls all league in terms of like MLS Next, MLS Next Pro, MLS. That's not managed by the federation. It's managed by MLS. High parental involvement. They definitely don't have that. They're not traveling weekly 3 hours for one game. Joystick coaching is not a prominent thing in these countries that are very successful. You don't ever hear kick it, boot it, or send it. And then last but certainly not least, they don't use God Soccer or have God Soccer points. Okay, those don't exist in countries that are very serious and successful at winning World Cups. Now, someone answered me this question. I live in the state of Florida. There are 30 million people. Why don't we have 50 national team players? Yet we have a country like Croatia with 3 to 4 million people that in 2018 reached a World Cup final. In 2018, they produced a Ballon d'Or winner in Luka Modric. In 2022, at the next World Cup, they reached a World Cup semifinal. And then in 2023, they reached the Nations League final and lost to Spain on penalties. They have 3 to 4 million people. Why don't we have 50 national team players, or at least producing the same level of success they are on the men's side? And that would be because development is not the priority. I think we can agree to that. Now, in Florida alone, there are over 22 youth soccer competitive leagues. There is, and that's crazy. You're going to see, or at least I'll talk about a graphic shortly. Now, here's reference. When I was a child, kid playing, there were two leagues. From where I'm from in Northern Virginia, there was ODSL, which was lower, and then there was NCSL. They actually worked together, and in order to get into NCSL, you had to either qualify and have a certain level of ranking through God Soccer, which is in a different situation, but point was they had promotion and relegation, or you had to earn it by going through ODSL, getting promoted to NCSL. So was it perfect? No. But what they did have was they had a system of promotion and relegation, which means you actually had to earn it. Now, if we look at the youth soccer landscape today, there are over 22 leagues. So I'm looking at a picture in front of me. At the top of the pyramid, there are MLS Next, USL Academy, Girls Academy League, and National Academy League. That's four leagues. That's crazy. Three of them are the boys. One of them is the girls. Second tier, you have ECNL, DPL, and USYS Pro. Third tier, you have ECNL Regional League, you have DPL, like a second tier DPL. You have like Sunshine Conference if you live in Florida. Fourth tier, you have NPL, EDP, and Florida State Premier League. Then tier five, you have FPL. I don't know what these other ones want. I-10, I don't know what that is. And FYSA LA. And there's other ones that are not on this list, but that's five tiers. You know what the most interesting thing about this is? There's no promotion relegation. You cannot go as a team from I-10 to EDP to ECNLR to ECNL to MLS Next. It doesn't exist. You have to pay your way in. And that's usually done by the club, not the team. The other side of that is what you should be getting from this is money. This is a cow of money coming in. So when I was a kid, there were two leagues. Now there's 22 to 27 leagues just in Florida. That should tell you all you need to know. Dollar bills reign supreme. Anyways, let's think about these questions and points. Why are there so many youth leagues? Would you be in this class if the system was designed to develop players? Why are there 8 governing bodies able to issue player cards? Why are kids that are very low level playing 77 at U8 and U9? And then answer this for me. Name one world-class American professional player. And I mean world-class. And no, Christian Pulisic is not world-class. Could he be world-class? We'll find out. But he is not world-class as of right now. Anyways, thinking about those questions, do you think development is the priority? Yes or no? And I'll tell you what is the priority. I already gave you one of them. Money. And the second one is social media clout. All these leagues and clubs and parents can go to social media and post. And I'll even tell you this, right? So when I was a kid, ODP used to be the pathway to the national team. Now, I'm not trying to knock ODP because I still think there's some value in it, but I am trying to highlight what's happened. Now, with ODP, what they did was they created, because the DA came in, and now we have MLS Next. And what happened was ODP is no longer the pathway to the top. It's a potential way to get additional training, maybe some exposure, but definitely an opportunity for players to play with people they don't know and are uncomfortable with. That's a benefit. Now, ODP came out with a thing and called it the ODP National Teams. What in the fudge is an ODP National Team? No, but like seriously, what is an ODP National Team? Because I don't know what that is or understand what that means. And I don't think you do either. So anyways, question for you. When does the league matter? The league that your child plays in, so I showed you those tiers, when does it matter? Now, you need to answer this question. Is your child a generational talent, yes or no? More than likely, they are not a generational talent, which means they are not a 0.00000000001%. And that would be like a Phil Foden, a Lionel Messi, a Cristiano Ronaldo, a Neymar. I think you kind of see where I'm going with this. A top-tier player that by 15, 16, 17 years old, they're signing a professional contract and they're getting significant minutes on the field at the pro level and at the highest level. Okay, now, another question or continue the same question. When does the league matter? There are 3 zones of youth development. I'm not going to really go into it too much, but zone 1 is from birth to 15 years old. This is the development, preparation, and experience zone. Zone 2 is the opportunity window. This is where you will get scouted from 15 to 19 plus years old. Okay, and then the third zone would actually be when you get to the next level. But again, there's a specific class that breaks this whole thing down. So just be patient for that one. Next one. Continuing the same question, when does the league matter? Your child has the level. If your child has the level, they are ready. They are ready for the next level or playing at the higher level. If they don't have the level, then they're not ready. Okay. And then same question, when does the league matter? Your child wants to be challenged. If it's too easy and they want to be pushed, you can take that step up. Okay, now ask yourself the following. Why do I pay to have my child play? Great question. Think about it for a second. Why do you pay to have your child play? Well, I would hope, and for you to understand, like this is what I would pay for. I would pay to watch my child grow, develop, learn, experience, and be challenged. That's what I would be looking for, right? And notice I didn't say anything about winning or losing. However, I will add, I want my child to learn how to have to give everything to win and earn the right to win, and as well, be humble in victory and modest in defeat. That's part of the process, okay? Ask yourself this question. Is my child at the correct level of play? And my rule of thumb, this is a guideline. This is not an end-all, be-all answer, but it should be about 50-50. They should win about 50% of the time, and they should lose about 50% of the time. The reason for that is they have to learn how to deal with winning, and they have to learn how to deal with losing. If a child is just winning, they never learn how to deal with struggling or failing or lacking success. If they just lose, they're going to be demotivated because they don't win. Kids want to feel success.
Okay. Now, are you opposed to having a coach that cares about your child's development? Why or why not? And the only person that can answer that is you. What I would say is, if it was for my child, of course I would want a person that cares about development, because that's what I do. I train kids in a developmental standard. Now, ask yourself this. Am I opposed to my child making mistakes? Most parents are going to say no, but the way that you guys behave on the sideline is yes. And what I mean by that is, you're joysticking, you're berating, you're trying to fix them when they come off the field, when they get a water break, whatever it is. In the car ride, you're trying to correct behavior because they made a mistake on the field. Dude, this is their journey, not your journey. Let your player play and figure this out. If you want to be their supporter, do that. And we'll talk about that more in other classes, but you need to be okay with your child making mistakes if they're going to reach a high level. Otherwise, they're going to constantly look at you like this in fear. And I want to make sure you understand this point. I'm going to say that again. If you are a parent that is constantly berating or joysticking or just on top of your child, especially when they make a mistake, your child will do this on the field when they make a mistake. They're going to look right at you like this. They're no longer going to be focusing on the game. They're worried about what dad or mom is going to say because of the mistake that they made. That means they're so focused on you, they're not even focused on the game anymore. So that needs to be corrected. Okay, so here are my recommendations in regards to this class. And you're going to see this with every single class, but I have a couple of points here for you. You should do the following. When you put your child into competitive soccer, you're paying for this. It's pay to play. Unless your child is very, very good, otherwise the organization will sponsor your kid based on merit. Otherwise, you're paying, and you are investing, in my opinion, or what I would be doing is I'm investing in my child's development, education, growth, enjoyment, social processes, and being challenged. That's what I'm paying for. Right? That's what I want from my investment. So you should use that in some sort of framework for yourself. I would also want them to be at the correct level of challenge, where it's not easy and it's not hard. There's a balance. And then once they're ready to be pushed, then we can start pushing the barrier to see where they're at. Find a coach who cares about development. Because you can say all you want that winning is not important, but you guys are putting your kids into teams where they get this badge that says, I'm top dog and I'm all this and I'm all that. Yet you're neglecting their long-term development by not putting them with a coach who cares. That's my perspective. Okay. And the last part would be, you need to be okay with and accept that your child will make mistakes and own that. It is okay. In fact, if they're making mistakes, they're learning and they're growing. If they're not making mistakes, they're not learning and they're not growing. So you need them to learn and grow if they're going to be successful on the field or off the field. And maybe they don't become a pro or a college player, but they become very successful in life and they have to be able to deal with and manage their own mistakes. So hopefully that makes sense. That's the end of the class. That's the end of class number one. I appreciate your time. And my goal is to make sure that I continue to earn your attention, time, and effort, because the most important thing that you have is your attention and time. And I appreciate you sharing this with me. And I will continue to do my best to make sure I can keep that as you go throughout this course. So this was class number one. You got many more to go through. I think you'll take a lot away from this. So keep it up. And I will see you in class number two. See you there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're enjoying the podcast and finding valuable information from it. Now, I do have a quick ask of you, and that would be to make sure to follow me on all social media platforms like Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, which is at Kyle C. Wilson Official, and on Twitter, which is The Kyle C. Wilson. And if you could help me do that, that would continue to help reinforce the ideas that I want to continue producing content specifically made for you guys to help educate you. And as always, you know I'm there to help, as I have $23,195 worth of content available for free through my YouTube channel that will answer and help a lot of the problems that you're going through, or at least your child's going through. So if you haven't found that yet, go to the YouTube channel, Kyle C. Wilson Official. And without further ado, let's get back into the episode.